All right, we got Sheldon Keefe calling in. Sheldon Keefe will join us in about 10 minutes. The Leafs coming off a win last night and 4-3 in a shootout, but it sure didn't play out like a 4-3 in a shootout game. I thought the Leafs were spectacular last night. I thought they played really well. Three on the power play. That's the best that power play's looked in years. I mean, that was a pretty epic performance by that power play. The big boys showed up last night. They all got on the board, and it was a good performance for the Leafs. But up 3-1, you end up blowing another lead. It happens. But Sheldon Keefe after the game seemed pretty happy with his team's performance, and we'll get into it with Sheldon in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, that.
I don't think that game last night you could really like say this is like giving up the lead again or be too pissed off. There was just some kind of some hockey stuff that happened last night, don't you think? I thought they played very well. Where I wasn't going to jump back on the train and say, oh God, here we go again. They gave up a lead. I thought they played very well. And the power play, like you said, was dialed in. That was NHL type movement. That Tavares goal, all of it. Oh yeah, they were dialed in on the power play last night.
Didn't seem like a 4-3 game at all. I mean, no. John Gibson was brilliant, but the scary part about it, and I don't know how you guys felt sitting at home. You're like, you know, they're going to score a moldy one, and that's like the third goal was a shot redirect. You're like, oh, here we go. Like now it's a coin flip once you get to 3-3. It doesn't matter, like they generated 19 high scoring chances at the time and all that, because the game should have been 5-1 at that point anyways. Maybe
the
6-1.
First one was like an own goal.
Yeah,
weird,
I mean, Engvall bounces it off of Spezza's skate into the, you're like, how did that even happen? Like watching it live, I thought it got caught in Campbell's gear and he like put it in his own net, like, and then the overhead, you're like, oh, you couldn't do that again if you tried. It was just a bad luck play. But, you know, I like the fact that they fought their way out of it regardless of what happened, because that was, I don't think it was adversity, but you just felt like, okay, you know, you're not getting ahead. You're not getting the goals that you deserved, put it that way.
I wonder if not having the crowd actually helped them in that circumstance last night.
You think
because,
so?
What, booing and stuff like that?
I don't know if it would have been booing, but it would have been a tangible vibe change within the building, considering the recent history. Like anyone that's been following this team, any Leaf fan knows, there have been a couple of 3-1s that get away from them recently, a couple of 4-1s that get away from them, and I wonder if it would have been a noticeable difference in mood in the building if it was full and they give up that third goal. Because I've been in the building for those moments, and I can tell you from experience, I know it would have been. Now, who knows how the team would have reacted. Maybe they just jump back over the boards. I think they're a mature enough group to know that they deserve 2 points. They deserve to be in the driver's seat last night. But that is the opposite end of the spectrum when you talk about the building and who's in there and who's not, is that it is just a consistent atmosphere.
Right.
You know, like nothing changes. There's no waves. There's no
–
the refs don't get affected by anything. I think there would have been definitely some audible differences within – the building if they give up that third goal. But power play again was outstanding last night. The big boys played really well. Like Mitch Marner, I thought, had himself a night. Matthews had himself a night. And the lines that got changed up, and we'll ask Sheldon about this when he joins us, it felt like those guys were playing together a lot, right? Like if they're going to load up on a PP1, he's going to get them out there as a unit coming off penalties.
It didn't feel like
it. As if it was some drastically different lineup.
No, because you looked up and all of a sudden Nylander was with Matthews or Nylander. You know,
right.
Like you're like, okay, well, that's not what the third line was on Monday, and that's why it was such a. Honestly, I didn't think it was a big deal on Monday and Tuesday. It's like, well, we got to talk about, you know, the Leafs' lines changed, because you knew the minute that Sheldon started to see, okay, Marner's going, Nylander's going, Tavares is going, Matthews is going, well, you got to get him on the ice.
And they all got minutes. There
exactly.
It is up on TSN4. Like Nylander, quote-unquote, on the third line, played 19-13 last night in regulation.
That's not third-line minutes.
That's
like,
not.
That's,
no.
So optically, however you want to look, and it could be a little bit of gamesmanship, too, from Sheldon going, okay, let's see what Anaheim, you know, throws at us as far as matchups and stuff like that. Like, if you've got the time to do it, and knock on wood, everyone's healthy, I have no problem with that. But, you know, when push came to shove, the lines were in a blender, or he was getting as many guys as he could out there that he felt was going to give them an opportunity. And that was Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares.
Right. And that's what I liked about the look last night, is that conventional wisdom would suggest the first line plays the most amount, then the second line, then the third line, where I think Sheldon Keefe, being a fairly modern, progressive coach, can look at the individuals. And, like, Nylander's a perfect example, because if you compare him to the amount of minutes his line mates played, they weren't on the same plane, and they won't be. So you can look at Kampf and Kerfoot and say, okay, those two are going to get quote-unquote third-line minutes or whatever it's going to be, but the third guy doesn't have to. The third guy, we need to find more minutes. We're going to sprinkle him in, you know, coming off penalty kills and more time
and
on the power play.
You mentioned Sheldon Keefe, Hazy. I think this whole idea, if I could read, we can ask the coach who's coming on with us, it would be about creating a matchup that they're difficult to defend against, where you throw Nylander on a line that the other team can't have a player of that quality, so you have the advantage. And then you have Tavares and Marner on a different line that's difficult to handle. They can make plays, make things happen. And then you have the ultimate big dog on one line with line mates that can do other things. It's about creating an advantage, playing the other team, a difficult matchup. You want the other coach to say, what the hell are we going to do against that line? How are we going to match? Because there's only one goal here. It's not for William Nylander to get 21 minutes a night, or this guy to have 70 goals, or this. It's to win a round.
Absolutely.
So you would hope that is going into the thinking here, because that's 35, 40 games away.
Yes, and the other thing is you have the luxury with home ice in this situation to mix it up, to change. If there's an icing and the fourth line's caught out there, okay, let's see who you throw over the boards. Like, that's the beauty of coaching. And Sheldon's a guy who's not shy. He didn't just, you know, set the four lines in stone at the start of the year and go, here, you know, have at it, let's see how it goes. He's constantly tweaking, pushing, pressing buttons. You know, I'm sure there's behind-the-scenes stuff where you give one guy a pat and another guy a kick in the rump and say, I need a little bit more from you. That's what coaches do, and good coaches do. So I you know.
They're also very healthy right now, too, right? Like, they are.
Exactly. I keep knocking on wood. But
you knock on wood. They've got everyone up front, I'm saying, obviously. Like, Muzzin is out, and we'll see when he returns. He's skating with the team. He's in a non-contact jersey. But that would suggest that he's capable of getting the heart rate going, and he's probably on the verge of return at some point.
Right.
But up front, you've got everyone available to you. And I think if you're the 12 guys in the lineup last night, a majority of them know they're playing, but guys on the third line, you know, you're probably feel pretty comfortable in that position that you're actually in the lineup. Because if you're a guy like Nick Ritchie on the outside looking in, who knows when you're going to get back in? Probably an injury. You know, more than likely, unless they give you a spot game here or there just to kind of
keep everyone fresh.
Keep everyone fresh as much as possible.
If somebody has a rough night, that's what the coach does. Gives them a jolt and says, hey, you know what? Come and watch a game for a second. And that's having the luxury of being able to put guys in and out. And you're right. If you're healthy, then you set your roster and you move guys around. And, you know, it wasn't a 4-3 game last night, but it ended up playing
John Gibson,
out like that.
Though, man, I'll give him some credit. Like, he can play, and he is their best player, right?
Like, I like the play where he made that ridiculous save, but then he had the wherewithal to throw it out and just say, keep going, get up there,
save.
Man. Absolutely. Be aware. Go. I love that play.
I laughed to myself. I don't know how you guys felt, but he had the wooden legs in the shootout. He was done.
Like, got them a
although
point.
You know, Matthews had a great shot, changed his angle, went blocker side, and who scored the first one?
Spezza
with the long reach. But I was like, he's done. Like, you know, he did everything he could. Now, it was almost like, go get me, you know, go score three, because maybe I'll give you one save here. Like, he looked like he was spent. And so, you know, you face that amount of rubber and quality chances, you are going to have a little bit of a lull physically. And I just I thought he was brilliant. There was a couple of plays. I laughed in overtime, too. It was like, let's just keep this rolling.
Yeah,
like,
we're on the clock.
Get me out of here.
We've got a point. Because in a scenario like that, you're playing with house money, right?
Sure.
Like, every team in the league has been in that spot where you realize why you're there. You're there because you got a couple of lucky bounces, and your goalie's been standing on his head, so you got your point. Anaheim is not in the same class as the Leafs. Like, that was evident last night. It was evident when the Leafs were in Anaheim playing them. The Ducks have been a really positive story this year. And they're in a playoff hunt, and we'll see if they can hold on. I'm not sure that that's a guarantee, but they've been impressive. And Troy Terry's been impressive, and Zegras and Drysdale, and, you know, there's a number of guys on that team that people are familiar with. But I think what is going to ultimately determine what happens with Anaheim the final 40 games or so, it's going to be John Gibson. And the question will become, can he stay fresh? Remember a few years ago he got to the All-Star game and then all of a sudden his wheels fell off in the second half.
Well, yeah.
And not that he's going to face 45, 47, 48 shots every night, but that was a game where Anaheim, they'll take the point and see you later. Well, you're just ecstatic that you got to overtime because they had no right to get a point last night. The Leafs were dominated really from start to finish. And here is the head coach of the Maple Leafs. Here's Sheldon Keefe back on Overdrive. How you doing, Sheldon?
I'm well, thank you. Good to be on, guys.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. As always, we've been talking about that game last night, and we're wondering your frame of mind behind the bench because it didn't feel like a 4-3 win for you guys. You control play all night. You dominated all night. The chances, the shots, every metric would have suggested that was a regulation win, but it wasn't. So how do you review it? You know, in retrospect, you look back on it, bit of a grind. You end up losing a 3-1 lead again, but I'm sure you're pretty happy with your group last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to be too excited when, you know, once again you have a lead and you give that up. Both in how I felt through the game and being on the bench and then watching it back today, you know, it's not too much for us to be too upset about there, other than the fact that we just didn't make good on our opportunities at 5-on-5 to really build a substantial lead and blow the game open. You know, and then there's mistakes inside of that, right? I mean, the 3-2 goal, it, you know, just after scoring on the 5-on-3, like, that's one you just can't give up. You know, we've got to be more aware there and got to be better there. And coming out of a timeout, I put a lot of that on myself, is keeping our guys sharp and aware in that moment. But, you know, and then they're making little mistakes along the way. But I just thought we played a good hockey game and put ourselves in positions to have success and to win the game. So I think ultimately getting the extra point in the shootout is warranted and deserved in this case. So, you know, we'll take the game and continue to work to clean up those little details that don't hurt us in the end, regardless of whether or not we're building our lead and making good on those chances.
So, Sheldon, you play in a market where if you go out there and change up the lines, it's the lead on SportsCenter. So you got to take us through. Everybody's talking about these new lines. The team's playing well, but Sheldon Keefe decided to change up the lines. Take us through your thought process of doing that.
Well, really, I mean, the biggest thing is that it's the first time really the entire season that we've been healthy. And I'm trying to think back, we went into Edmonton and played. We were close to healthy there. Just prior to that, obviously we lost Marner. These games feel like forever ago, but, you know, we having Mikheyev back and kind of getting through the worst of this COVID situation now, and felt like our forward group is healthy. So it's, you know, I've had things that I've wanted to look at really since training camp, to be honest. You can remember in training camp, we didn't have Matthews all through training camp. And then right around the time we got Matthews back, we lost Mikheyev. And then we dealt with different things along the way. So I just thought a combination of being healthy for the first time and we had 2 practice days leading up to a game day, is just thought it was the right opportunity for us to give a different look and have some time to adjust to it and get everybody comfortable with it. I think it's really important that we try some things like this. We have a good idea of some things that work really well that we can go to at any time, be it short-term fixes in games or if we just decide that we're not liking what we're seeing, we can adjust back. But I think it's important, and the health and the depth and the skill sets of our players that we have throughout the lineup give me greater flexibility, so I wanted to utilize that.
Sheldon, obviously your third pairing on the back end, young guys, you know, assess where they're at in their progression and, you know, if you're happy with them, you'd like to see more. And basically, you know, they're getting really well-earned experience on the job. Do you see, you know, a progression that you're happy with and, you know, and comfort level with that third pairing?
Yeah, I have been. You know, I think we look at it, you know, if we go back to the Ranger game there and obviously, no Muzzin and Holland, a big game like that on the road against a very good team, and it was a huge opportunity for those guys. You know, Liljegren had spent a good, you know, good period of time playing with Muzzin previously, but it's different, as you would know. You know, when you're playing against a team like that on the road without having the insulation of a veteran and, you know, responsible defensive player like Muzzin. And I thought that those guys actually started that game really well, like our whole team did. And then just, you know, as our team broke down a bit, it made it a lot harder on those guys. And we saw that. But I really liked how they bounced back. And another difficult building to play in, a different type of team than the Islanders, but extremely physical, very loud and combative fans, and an intense game. And those guys, I loved how they just played with poise. They knew contact and physicality was coming, but they made plays. They moved the puck up to our forwards and defended hard and well. So, you know, I look at those two as good examples of them bouncing right back versus allowing things to snowball. And I think that is a very important sign that young players have taken a step, because, you know, no player, regardless of your experience or your talent, is going to be great every single night. It's the ones that are more consistent and can bounce back quickly that stay in the league and can build a career. Those that allow things to snowball, well, they go back to the minors, generally speaking. So that was a really good sign for me where those guys are at.
Chatting with Sheldon Keefe, head coach of the Maple Leafs. You mentioned the Ranger game last week. You had comments about your team after that game that led to a lot of conversation in this city. Said that night that they played soft, your team played soft, played without purpose. When you make a comment like that or comments like that after the game, how much of that is directed solely at the effort that night and what you saw in that game that night? And how much of it is big picture, driving home a message for the end of the season and in the playoffs, which is really what you're driving towards?
I mean, really, just I'm talking out of the emotion of that game. I think I referenced more than one time that, you know, today, that's how I felt we played, or today our play was, or we were. I'm more referring to that specific night, and it's, that's really where I went wrong. And this is not only my choice of words, but leaving things open for interpretation. It's my job to be very clear and very direct about how I'm feeling, and not leaving things open for interpretation, in particular in a market such as ours. And things can get away on you, and that was on me. That's why I felt it was important to clarify when I had the opportunity the next day. Because really what I was getting at, and I wasn't even really making reference to the fact anything to do with our individuals. It was more about how we were playing as a team. And when we break down in structure, it becomes very easy to play against. And as a result, you end up leaving guys wide open at your net and you're given clear looks at your net versus us really, you know, focusing on the defensive piece and having purpose in that. We just we're going to do whatever we can to defend our net and make it hard to get to the net through our structure and our layers that we have. And that's how we want to play. It's on me to be very clear with how I speak. I certainly wouldn't change how I felt about our game and that, but, you know, obviously if you do it over again, you'd be more clear in how you speak, because I left things open to interpretation and things go awry when you do that. But really what I was referring to is just how we played as a team. You know, we referenced the young defense we had on that night, and we needed to play extremely structured and in groups of five to make it easier on our team and harder on the opposition. And when we don't do that, it becomes very easy to play against. And that's why that Ranger game, of all the ones that, you know, all the leads we've given up here in the last little while, stood out to me and was different because I just felt that we didn't adhere to the structure that's necessary to play within that. I mean, if we're playing against a team that just breaks us down and they end up finding their way back in the game, that's one thing. But when we don't adhere to the standards and habits that we need defensively, that's unacceptable. So it's on me to communicate that better to the media. I do think I was pretty direct and clear with our team, but when it comes to dealing with the media and my opportunities to address our fans and the media, I've got to, you know, do a better job of that.
No, you're good, bud. That's all good.
Well, I mean, I think you understand that it's a trigger word for the fans and the history of the team, your recent history in the playoffs. I don't think that's a surprise to you, Sheldon. I mean, it's a massive fan base. Everyone's split on, you know, where this team's going, what they've got, and what you're hoping to prove come playoff time. But in terms of the playoff messaging, like, how often do you allow yourself to bring that up with your team during the regular season? Do you put the cart before the horse and use examples and say, if we play like that in game 7 in the playoffs, we're in trouble? Do you do that, or do you just stick into the moment?
Well, I think we stick with the moment, because our guys know what we're building towards. I mean, I don't need to throw it in their face every day. They know what's going on. They know why we're practicing the way we want to practice, and why we're playing the way we want to play, and what's required. I mean, never mind the playoffs. I mean, just to keep pace in our own division, this is how we need to play. So, you know, let's build towards building something that's sustainable. So when things get difficult, which they were the other night in New York, you know, we're playing, we've got some key guys out of the lineup, we're playing on the road against a good team that's going to push their way back, and the crowd's getting behind them, and all those things are hard. So let's deal with this well. That's where we need to dig in even more and rely on our structure and play together as a group of five and support our goaltender. All those kind of things have to happen in those moments in particular. And, you know, I think for the most part this season, we've done a really good job of that. That's, you know, that in combination with the talent that we have has given us a chance to keep pace with the elite teams in the NHL. You know, but wasn't to the standard that I thought was appropriate for that night or was needed, and that we need to have success over the long term when things get really difficult. And especially coming off of that, you know, Colorado, Vegas, St. Louis trip, came home. That was us kind of getting back into it, playing in full buildings again. You know, we hadn't played games for quite a while. We come home, we had some time to reset at home, a couple practices, and then we got out to New York. I was expecting us to play even better than we had been, and I thought our start was terrific. And I was obviously disappointed with how we responded after that. But we're moving on here as a group, and I think we'll be better having gone through that.
Sheldon, you mentioned your goaltender. I mean, Jack Campbell's been fantastic this season. Your schedule with the rescheduled games that have been postponed and stuff is going to get very, very busy down the stretch here. Do you have an idea where you want, you know, Jack to land as far as starts, you know, getting Peter in the net a lot more to get his confidence and consistency going? I mean, is there a thought process? Or, I mean, you're trying – health obviously is a big factor, but, you know, you try and lay it out kind of week to week, or is it literally game to game just based on how things are so unusual within the COVID era, we'll call it?
Yeah, you know, we always sort of project things out, you know, week to week or even through the month. You know, we have a general plan one that we only, you know, it's really between the goaltending coach, Steve Breer, and myself, frankly. And we keep it that way because we know we're really going to address it day to day as we go through it. But you have a bit of a projection and try to make sure that you have a plan to manage things well. But we never really commit to it or don't communicate it to anybody else, including the goalies, until we absolutely need to, because we've got to monitor the goalies themselves, their health, their energies, what's happening with our team, all those types of things. So we fully expect and know that we're going to need two goalies. You know, even just our decision to play Mrazek the other night in Long Island, that's part of our plan. We need to get Peter more starts because before long they're going to be coming with great regularity. So we want to keep him moving and get our team comfortable playing in front of him, get him comfortable in the net. Yeah, that's important. Managing Jack's workload is important. It's been really challenging here since we've come back in January just because we haven't played a lot of games. So it's a combination of you need to get Mrazek going, but also Jack's been sitting for a good period of time between every game, even without playing Peter. So that's been a little extra challenge for both goaltenders, but you know, the calendar is going to turn here soon, and the games are going to come fast and furious, and both guys have to be ready for that, and we believe they will be.
with Sheldon Keefe. You guys got hit by COVID hard in terms of positive tests. As far as we know on the outside, it doesn't sound like anyone had a really arduous time going through it or a really difficult time going through it. But now that you're kind of through that wave, and not that everyone had to quarantine, not everyone has tested positive within the room and the organization, but a large majority, is there in a weird way a sense of relief now that you got through it? You know, you guys can move on. I don't know how that affects daily testing and the way you operate, but are things different today in terms of the COVID approach and the mood because you guys are already through it?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Brian, I think, you know, as you said, we've been through the worst of this here. We've got a number of staff and, you know, a very small number of players that haven't yet been through it. And those guys continue to test daily. But otherwise, you know, they call it a testing holiday or break or whatever they call it for, I believe it's at least 90 days. Nobody's testing. So it's a little extra peace of mind and a little more normalcy, if you will, to your day. So yeah, I think there's some positive and peace of mind within that. I think most of the league is now pretty much at that point. And the fact that, you know, with rare exception, I suppose, there hasn't been too difficult of symptoms. So that helps. Obviously, we're still going through stricter protocols and stricter measures that the government and the league are putting in place that you know, you're adhering to, depending on what city you're in and all those kind of things. And obviously we know the challenges we're going through here in Ontario specifically with no fans and mask mandates and stuff like that, but that's all part of it. And you know, the fact that we get to continue to play hockey and perform for people is obviously a positive that we're grateful to have that chance.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate. Leaf fans, they may not be in the building, but they're watching for sure and following along. And you guys coming off a big win last night, back in action in the weekend. So best of luck moving forward. We always appreciate you finding time for us, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Sheldon.
Okay, got it.
There's Sheldon Keefe, the head coach of the Maple Leafs. Lots nice. To chew on there. Yeah, that was a good little chat.
Well, King went, you were pretty excited there as you doubled down. But I liked his answer.
Had to take it down an avenue. That was your own little hot take.
Well, you brought up, like, I mean.
Come on, you know the market. You know, it's
we had talked about it.
I got to read on the market. That's just a fact.
You are the voice of the Toronto market. Yes.
That's right.
I mean, we hadn't talked to him since the comments from New York. So, you brought it up, but. I thought he gave a very elaborate answer.
He
as
did.
To, you
yeah,
know, that was his thinking.
That's why you asked the question. And that's why you follow through. And you know, I thought within the answer, what he said was interesting too. He's like, playoffs are obviously part of the focus, and he doesn't have to hammer his guys with that. Everyone knows where they're going. But he said just to keep pace in our own division, you got to play at a certain standard. Right, because Tampa and Florida are doing what they're doing, and Boston's right behind the Leafs.
Dude, the quality teams, and it's going to be more apparent as we go down the stretch, it legitimately seems like they just win every night. Like, it's just...
Well, there's such a disparity. Like, the teams at the bottom that know it, too, especially coming out of COVID and stuff. Like, I think
especially now they're going to start dumping pieces, Hayes.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, you got to beat the hell out of them coming down the stretch.
Look at this division with Ottawa, Montreal, Buffalo. I think Detroit will trade pieces and tail off.
But the unfortunate part is the trade deadline's still a ways away. Like, if they had the trade deadline earlier, I think you'd see the separation would be even more.
Because look at that list right from Detroit down to Montreal. Bad teams.
Yeah, it's just
bad teams.
You get Philly right now, you're like, all right, there's 2 points. You know, we'll see what happens tonight. But yeah, and honestly, if you look at the way it sets up, these are the three teams I think the Leafs are probably going to play. If it's within their own division, we know it's either going to be Florida or Tampa. If you're in the 2 or 3 seed, because Boston's not going to win the division. And I don't think Boston will battle into a position where they're into the the second seed, and the Leafs would be the third seed. So you're either playing Tampa, Florida, if you're in the 2-3 spot. If you drop to a wild card spot, you're either playing Tampa or Florida, or I think Carolina's going to win the other division.
Right.
So I think the Leafs at this point probably would look at it and say, we're either playing Tampa, Florida, or Carolina. That's your first round.
Yeah.
So You know, and that's not going to be easy.
No, you're,
yeah, you're in for one.
Yeah, sure.
You're in for one.
But,
for
you know,
sure.
You can't. All you have to do, we'll get into it at 5 o'clock. What you need to do is be confident in your team. And I think you need to add a piece or two at the deadline to go, how do we stack up against the top? You know, and that's if we're there. Or say we're if Toronto was there. If Toronto was there, how do you stack up against those teams? The one team, and I still think it's like crazy, but I think the Islanders are still, they've got 47 games left.
They're so, but they're 500 though, Noodles. Like,
well, I think they're
like their points percentage is basically.
I think they're above 500, aren't they?
Yeah, they're, if they are, they're right there. They're basically on pace for like 82 points.
They could go on a heater.
They got to catch a real heater.
You do.
Yes.
That's the only one that I would say from the bottom there. Mm-hmm. Like, they're a team that can get, like, they're a team that gets those, like, hey, they got points in 11 out of 13 games because of the way they play.
Sure.
Yeah. And they probably got to start going back on the road again because they've been home, it seems like, forever after that 13-game road trip.
I mean,
then they just have played a zillion at home. They're going to get back to regular road. Like, they could do it, but they got a big mountain.
Listen,
they
got
to
play,
like,
750 hockey the
rest
of the
way.
It's not realistic, but it's possible.
Yeah, like that's the only one I wouldn't count out from the bottom. That's the only one. And it's even a 10%, but it's at least.
And that doesn't affect the Leafs, right?
No,
that would be.
That's
a team
on the Metro side.
Probably on the Metro side.
And that's really, that's where if you think five from the Metro could make it and three from the Atlantic.
I don't see it, though. I think Boston's better than the Islanders, personally.
I do too, but it doesn't, you know, I'm just saying, like, that's the only one that could challenge something into a wild card spot.
We got Ray coming up, Ray Ferraro, just after 5 o'clock. So we'll catch up with Ray. The Raptors coming off a tough loss last night. There's some retirement news in the NFL. Our buddy Luke Wilson still to come. Brian Windhorst of ESPN still to come as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So all eyes will be on Honduras tonight, where Canada plays Honduras. The World Cup window is open, and it is go time. Canada in a very good spot to punch a ticket to the World Cup. And we'll be tracking that game tonight, that match tonight. We'll break it down tomorrow.
Did you see that cool thing that Julian did on SportsCenter, talking about playing in those facilities and the people outside the hotels? Like, that was crazy
stuff. It's a different world. Like, the way that the rest of the world reacts to soccer compared to North America.
Oh, yeah. Guys with machine guns everywhere. It was a really well-done piece. I don't know who from work did that, but that was extremely well done.
Yeah, like you hear stories from a lot of players where the bus, you get on the bus, and then the driver says, put your head down, and we are gunning.
Yeah, we're going.
Like, we are flying to the airport. And I don't know if that'll be the case in Honduras, but Canada's going without Alphonso Davies tonight, and you're sitting atop the table, and you're in a good spot, but you got to pick up points because you're playing the U.S. on Sunday, and this is a chance to get a few points against Honduras. You're at El Salvador next week. You get points. You just keep plugging along. And next thing you know, you're going to a World Cup. That's all people are hoping for at this point. Doesn't matter if you win or not, you know, in terms of winning the division or winning the group. Just finish in the top three, punch your ticket, and the rest will be history. So that's something to look forward to tonight. And the end of an era, Big Ben Roethlisberger deciding that is it. He will not entertain the idea of playing anywhere else. He's
off
right to Pebble Beach.
To Pebble.
Yeah. Is he in the Pro-Am next week? I wouldn't be surprised.
But that's the right call, is it not?
Oh, yeah. I like that idea. Like, it might be subject to change. I doubt it. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to call him back and say,
no,
we really
need
you.
No, you need to move past him.
They're like, done with him. Yeah. But will another team be desperate enough to bring him in? I wouldn't put it past a team that suffers an injury or whatever.
But who is he better than? Who would you take him over right now in the league? Well, there's a few in the league that you do.
Danny Dimes.
Don't tell the Giants owner. You see the Giants owner, John Mara, come out yesterday? He goes, we're committed to Danny Dimes.
No, you're not committed to Danny Dimes because he – and I think the ideal – more than ideal, the dream scenario and why you made the selection – and the curve is supposed to be Joe Burrow-ish, okay? Where it's like you're going to progress in a couple years, and then you're going to take the team to the playoffs, and then we're going to build all the pieces around you because we know that you're the guy. But he ain't the guy. We've talked about that guy forever, man. He is not the guy to take
you
anywhere.
Guy. No, he's not the guy. And now you're going to have a new coach, a new GM, and a new era. And at this point, for whatever reason, they're going to remain committed to him. But that doesn't mean they'll stay with him beyond this season. You know, they're paying lip service to it right now.
I know.
Because it's not a quarterback draft also. They got a couple picks in the top 10 or top 12, the Giants do, and there isn't a quarterback that sticks out. And I think they've learned their lesson from reaching on Daniel Jones not to do it again this year and reach on a guy that isn't worthy of a top 10 pick.
Hazy, you know, but my scenario that I texted you today, what I think Pitt's going to do to replace Big Ben.
Aaron Rodgers.
No.
No?
Deshaun Watson.
That is my projection. That's how I somehow think that, I don't know. I don't know the story with Deshaun Watson because I don't know the details, but I just think NFL teams are going to be like, and Mike Tomlin made one comment when the season was over. He's like, quarterback mobility is so damn important, man. I don't know if he was kind of taking a dig at where Big Ben was at as far as quarterback mobility. But I just think that that comment was like, I got to.
Someone's going to take Deshaun Watson.
That's right. Someone's going to say, you know what, a year's gone by. Maybe it's just kind of been shoved under the carpet a little bit, and we're going to, he's an unbelievable player, and we're going to take a chance on it.
Yeah. Like, he's still got to figure out the legal issues he's dealing with. As far as I know, he's still dealing with the court system, and he's dealing with, absolutely. Like, lawyers are involved in the whole nine. So it's a civil suit, multiple civil suits, and he's got to handle that. And on top of it, once he gets through it, will the NFL suspend him? That's a question that needs to be asked and needs to be determined. But you're bringing in a guy like Deshaun Watson, you're thinking he's your quarterback for the next 10 years. You know, if this blows over, quote-unquote, and he moves on and the NFL allows him to continue to move on and play, how old is he, 27? Like, he's a young guy, a young quarterback, and he can play. Like, he's you look at Josh Allen where he is right now. You look at where Justin Herbert is. The original Allen Herbert was Watson. You know, like, Watson was the guy being compared to Mahomes more than anyone else, or at least in that same realm. And now, because of what's happened in his personal life and everything he's got to deal with and handle, the fact that he didn't play this year, he's been kind of cast aside, and he's out of the conversation, understandably so. But once he reinserts himself into that conversation, he'll be a guy that you want to watch play. And if you're willing to accept whatever he's going through, he's a guy that'll lift up your franchise for sure. Right. So someone's going to acquire him. Once everything is settled, someone's going to acquire him. But the Giants owner came out and said, we're out on Watson. Like, publicly said, not happening. Ever since Brian Flores was fired in Miami, there's been a back and forth with the media. Does the owner want Watson? Does he not want Watson? Is he going to end up in Miami? So it's interesting that maybe publicly a couple teams are already saying we're not doing it. But he'll end up somewhere. And Rodgers, his offensive coordinator, has been hired as the new head coach in Denver. So those dots are already being connected.
Mary Swanson? Maybe
yeah,
there's a chance.
And I know that Luke Wilson explained it to us, where it's like these hires, and I got to be straight up, I don't know a ton about the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers.
Of course.
But it just seems like it's so true what Luke said, where it's like they want to be kind of underwhelming, where it's like they don't want to get the high-profile guy in there, where the expectations go through the roof, and then people are – it's just like, I don't know, and I don't know. I don't expect somebody to call Bill Cowher and offer him the world to get off the panel and go back and coach, but it just seems like all these transactions are just kind of guys that were behind the scenes, and all of it just seems so underwhelming for such massive positions for big-time organizations.
Well, that's it, and you know what happens? It's a copycat league. Everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay.
Well, I know the dude in New Orleans. The dude in New Orleans says, you know what, I don't know about coaching, but if I'm an organization like the Chicago Bears that want to get out of the ditch, I am at that guy's house as soon as he finishes that press conference, and I'm saying, here's a check for $100 million. Do you want to coach us and get us out of the ditch? Wow. I'm not just letting him say, oh, I don't want to coach this year, because maybe that's a bunch of crap, and maybe he told the organization, just as a favor, I'm not going to do it for 1 year. But I'll be right in his face right away. You got to.
Someone will with Sean Payton. Yeah. Someone is waiting. Someone's got a plan for him.
Well, for sure. He hasn't just walked. Like, he's thought it out.
He knows what's up.
He didn't wake up and just go, that's it. I'm going to figure it out in the future. Like, he has a plan moving forward. But does the NFL, I mean, there is a lot of retreading. You know, coach gets fired here. He ends up with another team right away. I mean, in every sport.
Oh, but once you're in the circle of friends, you're in a great spot.
But once what the league's trying to do and, you know, is, hey, let's try young guys. Let's see if there's young progressive people or, you know, people that think outside the box. And, you know, not retread the, you know, that guy had success 20 years ago and this is this guy's buddy and that. Like, it, I don't mind that. I don't mind to see new blood.
I think there can be a combination of both.
Sure.
Right? Like, in the NFL, you got 32 jobs. If half of them are kind of new, younger, progressive guys that aren't in the limelight because you don't know who they are or where they're coming from, and the other half are quote-unquote status coaches or name brand coaches, then so be it. So we'll see. And there's reports out there, Adam Schefter and others reporting that Josh McDaniels may actually be seriously thinking of taking the job in Vegas. And he's obviously been the OC in New England and probably the most famous
Schefter reports that a lot. He's reported that a lot. Didn't he absolutely sewer somebody like Indy where the quarterback got injured and then he was like, actually, I don't want to go there.
McDaniels took the job by all accounts. And then I think you're right. I think the news came out that Luck was either retiring.
Yeah. And he was like,
he pulled a 180 and left and went back to New England. But we'll see what happens out there. Maybe Mark Davis has got a compelling case. You never know. P.F. Chang's, a flip phone, and a minivan waiting for you on the strip. That's
and a boatload of money, though.
And a lot of money.
Cash is king. Exactly.
Vegas is waiting for you, too. Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us in about 20 minutes. Brian Windhorst of ESPN on the Raptors lost last night and a lot of different storylines in the NBA. That's coming up a little bit later this afternoon as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ferraro will join us. Yeah, go ahead.
I just saw something, Hazy, that I think is bizarre. Turner Sports has signed Draymond Green to its first active player, like, analyst situation, which...
I'm reading it right now. I was going there myself. It's a first of its kind. He's playing, and he's an analyst. Like, he's going to be in the studio at times with, like, Charles and Shaq and Ernie and Kenny.
I don't know, man. I love to think outside the box and give different people up, like whatever, but I just find that to be crazy.
Well, wasn't Nabauskas? I mean, didn't Nick?
Yeah, but he was done the season.
That was after the season was done. He was never in the playoffs, Noodles. He was up here doing something. Like, that's one thing. You're end of the playoffs, go ahead. Like, Ray used to do that all the time, right? Ray would be done. He'd go work for ESPN, and then, like, that's a different story. Draymond Green's one of the biggest, best personalities in sports, and he's been working with TNT in the past when his season has been done.
Right.
But I just read the press release. He's going to be flying to Atlanta at times when he can get in studio. He's going to be doing stuff after Warriors games that are on TNT, like he'll finish the game and then join the post game, I guess, and what, break down his own performance? Or
I don't know. I wouldn't be happy about it if I was a coach or his teammates. There's just something about it where it's like, dude, we got one mission this year. I don't know, Hayes. It would rub me the wrong way if I was his teammate.
But you know what? Things are different now. There are guys that have their own podcasts and stuff. I'm trying to remember. He used to play with the Leafs. He's right.
Noodles,
right,
that's one thing right to be sitting defenseman. In your living room in the afternoon after practice and doing an hour podcast.
Still doesn't matter. These guys are doing things that are different now than when we were in the pro ranks. It's I get it, and it seems distracting. And it's wait until he has to. And believe me, knowing Draymond Green, he's going to chew on some players in the league. Like he's not a guy.
He won't be shy about that.
He's going to shoot from the hip.
Yeah, he will not be shy about that. And listen, it's a grand slam if you're TNT.
Oh right. My god,
it's uncharted territory. And I am wondering if we're witnessing the parting of the seas here for a completely new opportunity for current players and active players. Because once the door breaks down, who's next?
Well, it's also the situation where he's like, I like attention, and I want to be on that panel with those guys, and I want to let them know as I'm playing that when it's over, I'm sliding right in there. So
absolutely.
I'm letting them know right now. Right. I want to be with the big boys on that panel at TNT. And I want it so bad, and I might have 5 years left. I don't know how – Draymond's got to be getting
up
there.
He's in his early 30s now, yeah.
Yeah, so he's probably got 3 or 4 years left, and he's like, I'm going right there after, so I'm letting you know.
But that would be available to him, I think, anyway, based on who he is.
I do, too.
So I think this might be exclusive to hockey, to basketball. I think baseball could possibly do it too. I think those are the two sports where the players have so much power and so much ability to be individuals and speak for themselves. And like, I just don't see – we just had Chris Long on yesterday. In the NFL, they break into your hotel room to make sure that you're not breaking curfew. I can't picture a current player in the NFL being allowed to do it. I think they'd say there's no way. I don't know if in the hockey world it would be allowed. Maybe. Like, it depends on who it is. Like, Draymond Green is not your average player who's just trying to survive. This guy's going to the Hall of Fame. He's won multiple titles. He's a perennial all-star. He's one of the faces of the league, one of the voices of the league.
Well, so who's that in hockey terms right now?
I don't know.
Yeah, what do you think Kyle Dubas and Channy would say? What do you think Kyle Dubas and Channy would say if Austin Matthews went to them and said, "Boys, I'm going on overdrive every day, like non-game days."
I don't think I'm on overdrive
with the boys.
I don't know if they'd allow it, but you never know. The Leafs are trying to, you know, they try to make guys feel good and happy and open doors. I don't know. This is an interesting one.
It would be a hard no.
It probably would be a hard no. Yes. It probably would be. Ray Ferraro coming up. We'll ask Ray about this. We'll get into a number of things with Ray. Brian Windhorst still to come as well. ESPN NBA Insider. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.